everyone, and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, our 16th episode. Time flies when you're talking shit about the Real Housewives.
Wow, 16 already.
I know, it's crazy. And this is a podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm here, in spirit, of course, only, with my art-recreating associate, Faith Richardson.
Hi. Oh, thank you for bringing attention to my truly the pinnacle of my lockdown so far.
Yeah, so you sent me some paintings that you had recreated with your partner to keep you entertained. And the funniest thing was that you didn't even realise that the Getty Museum had set up this challenge.
I'm so woefully unaware of, like, the internet. I mean, I was dead shocked. So obviously after you texted it, literally in like under 3 minutes, I'd already like put it on Twitter and like did the hashtag thing and everything. And I woke up the next morning and the Getty Museum had actually liked it. And I was just like, that's right.
Love that.
I mean, I'm sure as par and course of it, they've been liking everybody's, but still I was like, that's good. They've acknowledged it. It's there.
But you could literally enter. I don't know if they're doing sort of different themes each week or different eras, but they were so good, Faith. They were so good.
It was kind of frightening that really all we needed to do was make a rough out of paper and we had everything else that was necessary for them.
I think that's what impressed me so much, actually, because I was like, hey, they really did just have like a wooden globe, didn't they? Like,
we bought it from an antique shop about 2 years ago.
Just sorted like trinketry needed to put together. Painting.
I mean, I was truly, truly thrilled with how they came out. It took us like less than 30 minutes to do all three of them as well.
That's insane. Can you do one with the dogs? I feel like you need to get, you know, like where the dogs could be like the Renaissance babies or the chicks like tumbling, tumbling over the robes. I think that would be great.
Oh, we'll definitely try and find one of those. We've been given another one by our friends to recreate this week, so I'll do that one as like a little sort of extra additional prize at the end of it.
What painting are you going to try and do this week?
I'm not sure of the name of it. They've sent a couple through to us. We just have to pick one that we want to recreate. So I'm excited. I'll send you which ones we've been given, and you can give me your expert opinion on which one you think we should do.
I would love to know.
I also love that you tagged your mum in it, by the way. I was so happy.
Well, I just thought I could download these pictures and send them to her on Skype as like a series of images. But realistically, she's on my Twitter every single morning anyway, just like checking in because I speak to her in the afternoon. But I know that she likes to make sure that I'm still alive in the mornings. So it was honestly just easier to retweet you and to be like, by the way, this is my friend Faith who I've mentioned in phone calls, but you still don't know who she is.
Oh, my God, my mum's literally the same. She keeps like, so tell me how you know Lou again. I was like, I've literally told you this story about 4 or 5 times now. And she's like, I know, tell me again though, because I can't remember. Like, it's really glad that you listened to me.
I spent Christmas last year, because my parents were in various different places, I actually spent Christmas in Newcastle, and my friend Hannah invited me to spend it with her family, which was super, super lovely, kind of on the day in the evening. And a few weeks before, she sent me a voice note of her mum saying, I'm so excited to have a bohemian stranger in our midst. Which I just love. So from here on out, I just want to be known as the bohemian stranger. That is the explanation you can give to any mum asking about me.
I absolutely love that. That's exactly how I'm going to describe you from now on. Every time a mum asks me, she's just an exotic bohemian stranger that I befriended on the internet.
Bohemian stranger in our midst. I love it. It feels so right.
It does. It suits you down to the ground, I think.
So we decided, obviously, we came to Vanderpump Rules, we came to the end. Now, have you watched the reunion or Secrets Revealed?
I haven't watched Secrets Revealed yet. I think the reunion's on the 2nd of June, I think. So I'll probably watch it. Although I don't have high hopes, because obviously it's like a Zoom reunion, and I just feel like it'll make me a bit seasick watching all the screens jump around.
Yeah, so I watched the Atlanta Zoom reunion, and there's something about it that I appreciate that they're doing what they can to bring us content, in this time. It's nothing against that, but I just there's something about the format that I really don't like. I think it kind of stresses me out too much, like, oh my God, like this is the reality of TV programming, possibly for the foreseeable.
Yeah, I think the same. Like I've seen stuff about them saying like the RuPaul Drag Race finale is going to be the same, and I was like, but it's not the same. Like it doesn't have the same vibe. Like personally, I'd rather they just waited and like we had to put off finding out who'd won and everything until we could have a proper finale. And it's kind of I think how I feel about the reunion as well. It's like I don't feel like, especially with Vanderpump Rules, I'm like I don't feel like there's enough happened in this series where I'm itching to watch the reunion, so I'd have much rather just held off and then being like, oh yeah, we'll go back to that now. I'll probably care a bit more.
Having said that, I listened to Vanderpump Rules Party podcast this morning. They did an interview with Danica, and she said that they were filming from 8 a.m. till about 6 o'clock in the evening.
Oh my God. Oh, maybe there is quite a bit then.
So there must have been something. I
Yeah.
don't know.
That's a lot of time to be spent. Considering it doesn't seem like there was a huge amount really to resolve after that series.
No, she said that something's going to come out about someone being a snake.
Oh, well, I mean, that could be literally anybody.
Is true. The only person that it's not is Jax, because he's just an out and out arse.
If there's one thing that Jax Taylor's good at, it's about being an overtly disgusting human being.
So anyway, we wrapped up Vanderpump Rules. I don't really want to like cover the reunion.
No, I don't think so either. I don't feel like we need to.
Nah, there's not enough to unpack from like a content perspective.
No, and even if there was, we'd have to sort of watch all three of them and then maybe combine them, but that just seems like effort.
There's three parts.
Usually they do like a three-part reunion, don't they?
Oh.
I know.
I mean, for this series, that's gonna be.
I know, clutching at straws, I think.
Not sure about that. So we had a think, we had a regroup, and we decided to cover Real Housewives of Potomac from the beginning because we want to have sort of one historical show running alongside Roni, which is obviously coming out at the moment. And we did briefly debate Real Housewives of Sydney, which she sampled last night.
I did. I mean, it was glorious. I'm not gonna lie to you. It was like sheer unadulterated trash, like the kind that we haven't seen since like the early OC Miami days. So, I mean, it was great from a televisual standpoint, but there's not really a lot to unpack with them. It's just sheer drama and not much really happening.
It's so funny that you should say that because I've written in my notes, we've decided that Sydney is an amalgamation of early OC, Miami, and The Only Way Is Essex.
It really is. It had so many of those vibes. And you know the trailer that you sent me to watch at the end of last week when we were trying to decide what to do. So when I watched that trailer, I was like, oh my God, there's like it looks like so much happens in this like series, like blah blah blah. I watched it. Everything in that trailer happened in literally the first episode.
Oh, for Sydney.
The whole throwing of the coat overboard and all of that. I was like, oh, you just went straight in. There is no fucking around here. No kind of nice pretense to build upon. Just craziness from the get-go.
No run up, just straight into confrontation,
I feel
fighting.
like there's only one series of it, so I feel like I'm gonna watch it just purely out of pathological interest, really. But
Why did I think there were multiple series? Maybe Hey You only has one series up,
yeah,
but I
that's what I was
thought.
thinking as well. But I think we've made the right call with Potomac because even just after watching that episode, I'm already invested.
Yeah, so your assessment was that Sydney was kind of more blatantly trashy, but there's just a lot more to unpack on Potomac, so here we are.
Exactly. Although, hilarious story. So obviously, I watched one episode of Potomac last night and the one episode of Sydney. And then I sat down this morning to re-watch the Potomac one to make my notes and realized that last night I hadn't watched the first episode, the first series. I don't know which one I'd watched, but it certainly wasn't the first one.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe you were watching the most recent one.
I think I possibly was because I went back and like definitely watched the first series and the first episode today. And I kept pausing it and clicking off it, being like, am I watching the same one? And I was like, I'm not. But this is the right one. And I was like, what the fuck did I watch last night?
That's so funny. You must have been in as much of a haze as I was.
Yeah. I'm really just muddling through life at this point.
So Potomac is situated outside of Washington, D.C. It's in Maryland.
Yes.
And it's a sort of little known high net worth cluster. And I think the thing that they really seem to be hammering home in the kind of introduction is the really strict moral codes of behavior. Like, they're getting that in quite early on.
Yeah, that was sort of definitely an overriding theme of the whole first episode, was this like heavy reliance on proper etiquette and things like that, which, I mean, is so far removed from my life that it's not even funny. But
and what's so, I've actually seen this series before, but not for a long time. But in this, we get hints that Ashley, who we haven't been formally introduced to yet, she's kind of the one in her 20s, so she's like the young one, and she's the wild card that's going to kind of get let loose and introduced to this more mature group of ladies. And it's all about like, will they allow her into the social circle or not? In fact, the word etiquette is mentioned about 5 times in the preview alone.
I kind of love that they always seem to do this, though. They always seem to put together a kind of group of more like mature, like established housewives, and then they always just throw in this wild card. So it's like Leah is the one for like Roni, and I think when they had that Joyce and things like that in Beverly Hills, they kind of just seem to throw these like odd little youngsters in amongst them to try and shake things up, which I do like, and I think it adds for like a different layer to it.
Yeah, because they know that they're going to get threatened by them whatever happens.
Yeah, they can pretend to be the most secure person in the world, but they're always threatened without fail.
And what I like about this is you get the sense that there's this group of women who espouse quite traditional views, who are perhaps quite socially conservative. And then we see, so Katie as well, who's one of the younger ones with the Jewish boyfriend, and Ashley is the catalysts for kind of coming in and challenging that in various different ways.
Yeah, and I love that, because I know Giselle was saying that she used to be married to a pastor, and they all seem quite religious and very conservative and very sort of well-to-do and proper. So it's nice to have like a different dynamic of like the younger, more sort of like liberal kind of standpoints, and just a little bit more loose and free with things.
Definitely. So in terms of taglines, Giselle's tagline is, the word on the street is that I'm the word on the street.
I mean, I don't understand.
What does it mean?
This one threw me for a loop already. Like, I was paying particular attention to them because I always feel like they're kind of good, especially when you're going in blind like me. I've never seen any of the series, any of the episodes. I don't know any of the women. So I feel like the taglines are supposed to be a kind of good little way of almost like pigeonholing them at the start, so you know about like a bit about them. And this told me nothing about Giselle.
Yeah, because they also record multiple taglines at the start, and then they actually pick to air the one that kind of slots in best with how the stories unfold.
Oh, I never even knew that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so they can kind of be tells in some ways of like what the focus is going to be. I guess from this, we get that Giselle does a lot of talking, or is she being talked about?
I know, I'm thinking possibly the talked about one. I mean, obviously, as the episode goes on, we kind of see that although she's not one of the younger sort of crowd in there, she's definitely a lot less conservative, a lot less sort of stuffy than the rest of them. So maybe it's kind of a nod to that.
I think Giselle is such Marmite. Like, I think you love her or you hate her.
Yeah. I was going to say, I agree, yeah.
I think I like her to begin with, but I think as the seasons progress, she becomes too much of a villain, and it doesn't get kind of offset by her playfulness as much.
Oh, that's a shame, because I was going to say, like, just based purely on this one episode, I was kind of quite team Giselle versus like all the other stuff that happened. So I can totally see how she gets like a bit of a villain edit, because she does have that very sort of Marmite black and white kind of personality where you kind of either warm to her or it's just incredibly grating. So I can see that.
Yeah, and I think in this episode still she's functioning as the voice of reason.
Yeah. got recent, wiggle.
Recent is truly not in great supply.
No. I can't wait to see how quickly that unravels.
Karen's tagline is, in Potomac, it's not who you know, it's who you are. And I'm everything.
I mean, this, even just based on the one episode, this does suit her so much. And I can fully get who she is from it. I mean, I don't necessarily love it as a tagline, but also I think it tells us a lot about her.
I think she's coming from a very Tinsley-fied place of family money, of kind of expectations of how to do things. You know, she's been married 20 years.
Yeah, I think she sees herself as kind of like the grand matriarch of the entirety of Potomac.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how she chooses to take people under her wing or doesn't.
I know, I kind of like, I love and hate that notion that she can sort of make or break somebody in that little city. And she's obviously, it's a job role that she relishes.
Katie's is, I'm a ball and gala girl. It's my legacy and my calling. I thought she said ball and gaga girl initially.
Literally exactly what I thought as well. And I was like, oh, okay, choice words for that one. But yeah, when I went back and put the caps thing on, it was there. It wasn't.
I mean, frankly, that would be more exciting.
I know. I wish it was. A ball and gaga one would be far better than balls and galas.
I feel like it's a very dull legacy to be working towards, but she is inarguably like a stunning woman.
Oh my God, she is gorgeous. I literally couldn't stop looking at her.
Robin doesn't have a cookie cutter life and she's not apologizing for it.
I mean, I do like it, and I think I quite liked Robin just based on this first episode. I kind of like that she's a bit more chill and a bit more normal seeming. So maybe this does fit her, and kind of obviously she doesn't seem very particular about the etiquette thing like some of the other women are.
Yeah, I liked her this episode. Again, I think I'm looking at it through a slightly jaded lens because I think she kind of tends towards a bit of teddiness.
Oh, really? Oh, I can sort of see that actually. Yeah, I can see her sort of being a bit boring and a bit kind of stuffy.
Yeah, and then I think there's like stuff with her and Juan that she wants to keep kind of under wraps, but like, you know, we're kind of on the show to kind of see that chaotic and difficult relationship. So,
and that's the age-old kind of argument that a lot of people seem to have on the show, is like when some people choose to keep parts of it private and others don't, and it's that kind of like, well, this is the show and that's the whole point of being on it, is that you show us everything or you shouldn't be on it, which I do understand, but it must be hard, especially when you've got quite a difficult dynamic like that, to not want to keep some things held back.
Yeah, I think what annoys me about Robin is like she's too inert in her situation. Like she doesn't really, I get she's got the kids and stuff, but she doesn't really kind of put any sort of pressure on Juan to kind of change the situation. And I think she needs to be a bit more like heavy-handed with it, in terms of just like, oh, I'll just let him, you know, sleep in my bed and live in my house, but like date other people. And
that just blew my tiny mind. When she was explaining that whole setup, I was like, girl, no, you're better than this. Everybody on the planet should be better than this.
Yeah, it's wild. But also Juan is really hot, so.
Yeah. I mean, there is that.
Charisse, her tagline is, if I don't know who you are, then you're not worth knowing.
I mean, I suppose that kind of sums up the women's general consensus about anybody in Potomac, doesn't it?
She's pretty awful from what I can remember.
Yeah, she seemed it, to be fair. I kind of, like, the first maybe 10 minutes that she's on the screen, I was like, oh, I don't think I mind you so much. And it just unraveled from there. And considering we're on episode one, it doesn't bode well.
No. Very early on to be pledging allegiances.
Yeah.
So Potomac itself does look absolutely stunning. There's lots of like lawn porn going on. There's shots of meandering rivers, and we get like an opening sequence of, you know, country club activities. We're at the golf course. We have a tennis lesson ongoing. We have Charisse kind of lamenting her lack of gardening help.
I mean, it really sets a beautiful scene for exactly what we're going to expect from these women.
And then we go to Giselle's, who is baking with her girls.
I know. I kind of like this little scene. I think it's why I started off on a good foot with Giselle, where I was like, oh, she seems quite nice and normal. And, like, it's nice seeing, like, slightly chaotic family time as opposed to, like, really regimented, like, well-behaved children. That's clearly for, like, the TV show.
Yeah, I felt like they had, like, a nice dynamic going.
Yeah, I did as well. And you could tell it was a very sort of, like, nice, comfortable, like, natural home environment.
She says that only legacy or large cash flow can allow you to reside in Potomac, which we're then told is one of the most exclusive postcodes in the nation.
So I feel like I need to do some research into Potomac for next week's episode because I don't know anything about it and I'd never heard of it until this show.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't even know where Bravo would have started to kind of pitch this, or, you know, how they would have identified this as like a cluster of people to look into.
I know, like, I can't even get my head around like how big of an area it is. Like, is it literally like LA sized, or is it like a really, really small, almost like a gated community sized setup of houses and things? Because I don't know how a whole area can be like that level of wealth, but without ever being on the map in the way that places like New York and LA are.
I think it's almost like, maybe not village size, but I think it's like small town, but like moneyed suburb.
Yeah, possibly more like the Hamptons kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And when you kind of look at the houses, you kind of, I mean, they're more like McMansion-y than the Hamptons. You don't get like the wood and they're like kind of newer style houses. But I'd imagine it's people commuting to DC or like second homes of people working in DC.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. And I mean, it was literally some of the clips where it was just like a little drive down the street. I mean, my jaw literally fell open looking at some of those houses. Like, they look like shit that you would build on like The Sims.
Yeah, once you've done the Motherlode cheat code.
Yeah.
Or Rosebud :\, :\.
It's truly the only way to play The Sims.
Of course, if you're not playing it to do interior design, then what's wrong with you? Although I did used to do like cults and stuff.
I love that.
I fell in love with someone on the plane that lived in Washington, D.C. And then we talked the whole way there, but I was really drunk. It was like a red eye flight on New Year's Day. And I'd basically come straight from a New Year's Eve party. And I was flying home and he was an aviation management consultant.
Oh my gosh.
He's got talking about like North Korea. It was wild. And on the other end, I panicked. I don't know why. And he stopped me and he turned to me and it was like where domestic and international go like split at Heathrow. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, this is it. And he like turned to me and he was going to ask me for my number. And I don't know why, I just panicked and I just like was like, bye, have a safe journey. And I legged it and then I went straight to Wagamama's, ordered myself a Wagga's breakfast because at this point it was like 8 a.m. and I sat there and I wrote on my phone a list of everything that I could remember about him, like an absolute psychopath. And then I tried to hunt him down on LinkedIn.
Oh my god.
And I messaged this one guy who looked like him and like things added up in terms of like location and job role. But, you know, the LinkedIn pictures are very small and like you can't really like see them very well. And I messaged him and he was like, yeah, look, I wasn't traveling over New Year, so there's no way that could have been me. And I was like, oh,
oh my God, that's so depressing. You have to find him.
I know, part of me is like, one day, maybe I'll go to DC and like hunt him down. There can't be that many like aviation consultants around. And he had just done some work on consulting, I think, the Indian government about how to use drones for like personal transportation, which sounds like quite a specific project.
It does. I feel like if you did a bit of like proper like academic research into it, I bet you could find him.
Oh, and then go and live in Potomac.
Yeah. And you can just meet them that day.
So we learned that Giselle's father worked with Martin Luther King and has like a very illustrious legacy. And she said when she moved away to be with her husband, everyone was in mourning for 3 weeks. And that's just a good introduction to Giselle's general energy, which is good. I think she has a healthy ego.
Yeah, I do as well. I think she can sort of poke fun at herself, but she is just very much like confident in who she is and the fact that she thinks that she is the shit.
Oh, she is more than beautiful enough to be that arrogant.
Oh, 100%. She's got the goods to back it up.
And so we kind of intimate very early on that she's not into the old world rule book that some of these older ladies are trying to play by, namely Charisse and Karen.
Yeah. And I love that she established that like early on, as if to be like, I am nothing to do with this. This is not me, not who I am. And considering she makes a big deal about how much of like a legacy she comes from and the fact that she has like generations of family have like lived in the area and stuff, I think it's kind of refreshing that she's decided that she wants to be a bit more like down to earth and normal.
Yeah, and I think obviously she was married to a pastor, but then he kind of had infidelity scandals and stuff, so she's probably a little cynical and jaded from that, and that's not a bad thing to have a level of realism and to kind of be wary of certain things.
I know. I think a good level of like cynicism is healthy. I think you can't be too naive about things. And I imagine she probably married a pastor thinking that her marriage would be like super virtuous and super safe and she would always be able to count on him. And obviously completely betrayed her, and being a pastor means jack shit. So I imagine she's probably just like, well, that didn't work out how it was meant to.
Oh my God, there used to be this reality TV show called Preacher's Daughters.
How have I never heard of this?
It was amazing. I think they must have showed it on ITVB one summer when I was at school. And it just followed like the kids of preachers going off the rails, basically, which was obviously amazing and I loved. I agree with you. You have to have a degree of cynicism. If you're too naive, you get taken advantage of, right? So
exactly.
It's nice to be friendly and soft and all of those things, but you know, if you're an independent woman, you're raising a family, you want to protect them, you've got to have a degree of, you have to have your guard up to a certain point.
Yeah, you have to have like a certain level of like protection and a certain level of kind of mistrust of people. I think it's always good to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I think to just blindly trust people who haven't earned your trust or respect is foolish.
It is. Katie and her boyfriend are going to a mixed bar and grill. Katie is gorgeous, and I'm also very into her boyfriend. I'm sure this is no surprise for you.
Yeah, that did not shock me in the slightest.
However, I cannot stand someone ordering for me.
Oh, I hate it. Even if I've told them what I want, I don't want them to order my food. I'm a fucking adult. I want to ask for my own food, and then I can ask for whatever I want, and it's not up to you to decide.
Yeah, exactly. That's just like a really small thing that annoys me far more than it should.
Same. Like, I don't think it's like romantic or charming or sort of gentlemanly. I just think it's quite obnoxious.
It's so obnoxious. Not into it. And then Katie starts banging on about how being a socialite is a full-time job and being a philanthropist is a full-time job. Now, seriously, are there any philanthropists in inverted commas in Britain? Like, this is a very American approach to things.
I know, and like, I mean, there's obviously British people that give a lot to charities, but it's not like their job or their role in life. They kind of do it as like a bipartisan of how much money they've been able to earn. Like, even I know like JK Rowling, even though she's became the freaking Antichrist on Twitter, but like she donated so much to charity that she went from like a billionaire status to a millionaire status. So it's like, I think we have like that kind of philanthropy, but not as a actual job role.
Yeah, like I don't see people declaring themselves as philanthropists or... Oh, I guess our version of the socialite is the It Girl.
Yeah, I guess kind of like the Alexa Chung, like Pixie Lott sort of vibe of girls that kind of went in the early noughties. I guess that's probably our version of it.
Yeah, just bankrolled by family money who just hobnob around London.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I was talking to my Iraqi Texan friend. Now, that's a mix.
That is a combo and a half. That. How spectacular.
And she was saying about how like the attitudes differ in her two cultures about charity. And she was saying like in Texas, unless you're seen to be doing something good, it's almost like it never happened. Like it's almost like it didn't count. Whereas in the Middle East, if you're kind of overt about your good acts, or, you know, you're going up, like telling everyone about them, it almost negates them because then it's seen as being like self-serving.
It's kind of like the equivalent of like when people give food to homeless people, but they video it and put it on Facebook. And then there's that sort of like back and forth debate that always happens of like, why are you doing the good deed? Is it to do the good deed, or is it because you want to be seen as doing a good deed?
Yeah, and to be honest, ultimately, like, I don't massively care. Like, as long as you're doing something good, that's fine. Like, whatever your motivations are. But
yeah,
I just think it's interesting, this sort of industry or this world of like these galas and charity auctions. I find it quite fascinating.
I do as well. Like, I think it is such like an untouched kind of world as well. Like, obviously, even like Rhodey, we've seen it touched on a few times when they throw like benefits and things, but it's more of like a side project than it is like their whole commitment and like lifestyle.
Yeah,
so I think it's kind of, I never really thought about the fact that people did that like as a career, which just seems, it still seems wild to me.
The thing, it just still sounds kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So she's hinting that she basically needs to get a proposal, like, pretty sharpish, because her family is very traditional and they're expecting her to not remain unmarried, essentially.
Yeah, and she was just like, oh, it's, like, so not a good look to not be married, which I think is just such an old-fashioned, like, viewpoint. And considering she is, like, younger, I mean, obviously she comes from, like, quite a big legacy there, but, like, she is younger, so I'm quite surprised she has such a traditional view of marriage still.
I think in Katie, we see a clash of those two worlds. So we see the kind of familial expectations that are more in line with the Karens and the Charisses. But then we also see more that wild side and that kind of youthful energy and, you know, that same kind of chutzpah that she, you know, got up and walked out on her husband when she was 4 months pregnant. Like, not a lot of people would have the guts to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of, I think it's always good to be able to sort of like move between like two polar opposite worlds like that, because I think it kind of makes you a more well-rounded person. And I guess it means that she can fit in with like the super etiquette focused women, but she can also be crazy and have fun with the less traditional ones. So I guess it's kind of nice to be able to sort of migrate both of those, like between both of those.
Yeah, she's operating at an intersection a bit, or she has elements of both within her.
Yeah, which I think is kind of nice. I guess it's sort of, it's a good blend of the two. But she reminds me very much of like Tinsley in that kind of like traditional, uber rich, like uber conservative kind of family. But you can tell that she kind of wants to be a little bit more relaxed, but can't get away from those ideals that she's had sort of drummed into her.
Yeah. And now we go to Robin's place, and we find out that Robin works in PR, and she's, like you, Faith, taking some time to get some stuff up on eBay.
I mean, I really resonated with her at this point when she was just like selling her wedding dress. I was like, well, I don't need it. It's taking up space. And it's like, good for you, girl. Like, well, throw that shit out.
And like, I did not think it was a nice dress.
Oh, it was hideous. It was everything I hate about wedding dresses.
The kind of bust corset bit wasn't so bad, but it was kind of the ruched or the gathered of the fabric on the skirt. I just did not vibe with that at all.
It just reminded me of like that first like wedding dress shop I went to, and I went in and everything was monstrous, and it was like great big like meringue dresses in like flammable polyester. And I tried a few on, and I was like, this is not for me. Like, I do not belong in this world.
No, your wedding dress is going to be sick. It's going to be sick.
I'm so excited to get it done.
So she explains that she's been divorced for 3 years, and she makes a dig at Juan, saying that's what happens when you marry someone in the NBA, not someone with an MBA.
Which I did love, to be fair. I even wrote that quote down because I thought it was so brilliant.
I mean, I don't really think MBAs necessarily count for that much. Like, even my dad, who is like, education till you die, you know, you can't have. I remember driving to my high school graduation and being like, Dad, what's your degree in? And he was like, well, technically I have six. But even my dad calls an MBA a master's of bugger all. So I'm kind of like, look, I would rather marry a hot basketball star.
Yeah.
Although it would be tiring having to pretend to care about sport in any way.
Oh, I know, on like a consistent basis. Like every game, every match, like whether they're involved in it or not, like I'm sure they'd want to watch all the other ones. And it's like, ugh. It's like Greg plays like ice hockey, not like super competitively, but like he's the captain of his team and he practices like every, obviously it's been cancelled at the minute, but every Friday night he gets picked up from our house at 11 at night and he goes and trains at ice hockey until like 2 a.m. and then comes home every week. And then most weeks he'll have like a match on Saturday morning. And I'm just like, I could not be asked. There is nothing in this world that I enjoy that much.
Why does he go so late? Why is it like middle of the night?
Because it's the only slot where it's not like open to the public. And then there's like 3 other ice hockey teams from the Northeast who also train. So they just have like these allotted slots and they're always like super late at night.
Oh my God, that's so... Yeah, no, I'm not in for that.
No, and I mean, I always feel quite bad because like Greg's like getting picked up at 11 o'clock and I'm just like having a drink on the sofa by myself, like watching Sex and the City. It's like, you go and enjoy yourself in the cold ice ring.
I mean, ideal for you.
Yeah, it's great. It's like having a nice little night to myself. I get to go get into bed and it's all to myself and it's just me and the dogs. So I do enjoy it.
I used to love when my ex went to the football. I used to be like, hey, you got football today?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a game. And I'd be like, oh, fuck it. Yes. 2 hours by myself. I can breathe.
I know. Greg sometimes has like matches that are like further down the country. So they'll go and like stay overnight. I'm like, oh my God, like a whole leisurely weekend that's just for me. What am I going to do?
That is nice.
It's the dream. I love it. I love those like little moments where it's like, oh, this is good. I'm enjoying this.
We learned that Robin and Juan are co-parenting in the wake of their divorce and basically still living as a family unit. And Giselle kind of vocalizes that she thinks that he should move out if he wants to date other people. So what do you think about that?
I mean, I fully agree. I don't understand why they're still even living in the same house, much less sharing a bed. Like, fair enough if you think your kids are young and you kind of want them to grow up with both their parents in the house. Maybe I could sort of get on board with that. But I would be like, in a house that size, have your own fucking wing. Like, you stay down there, I'll stay up here. We'll combine in the middle for family meal times and family stuff. And then you can go off over there and I'm going to go here and have nothing to do with you.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's actually really nice that they're trying to kind of, they've got this united front. And I think like, I'm constantly like thinking about how my divorce is going to play out because it feels almost inevitable at this stage. But I like that as an idea, but I agree with you. Like, I think sharing a bed is kind of heavy and you've got to have some kind of either ceasefire on the dating or get to a point where you've got your independent lives, you know, maybe on alternating weekends, you're able to go off and go on dates, but then kind of be out of the house for the weekend. Or I don't know, I think you'd have to have quite rigorous rules in place to stop it from getting really messy.
Yeah, I agree. And it doesn't give you any room for closure or any time to actually move on from like the divorce or whatever. Because I mean, in essence, apart from the fact that I'm presuming like they're not like having a romantic relationship with each other, they still have all the same like bonds of marriage just without any of the intimacy and stuff. And you think, well, at some point you're going to miss that. So why not start now to like create a healing process? And then when that point comes, you'll both be in a much better place to move on from it. Because otherwise at the minute, if one of you goes out and starts dating, it's going to feel really jarring because your marriage is basically the same.
Yeah. And I think that's what I mean when I say that she frustrates me a bit with her inertia, because it seems like there's not really a willingness to either move forward with Juan or create a set of conditions where she could go out and see other people. You know, she's kind of just in the middle of everything. And I think that's what is sort of frustrating.
Yeah, she's like so passive about it all. And I just can't fathom not making that kind of a like decision about something that's so huge.
So Juan walks in at this point to find his ex-wife. wearing her wedding dress on the sofa. He's totally flustered and leaves immediately.
Which I did love. And I mean, to be fair, any normal human would walk in on that and be like, what is happening here?
Yeah, and I mean, fair enough. He was just like, oh, I'll leave you to it.
Yeah, and he was like, this is weird. I'm going to leave. I'll see you later.
We then head on over to Ray and Karen's, and we learn that Ray is the Black Bill Gates.
I love that she's clearly taken on this moniker for him, that she's just introducing him as to anybody and everybody.
You know that Ray has never called himself that in his life and is probably mortified.
Every time those words leave her mouth, you can see him shrivel slowly.
Ray's style choice, though, is very much in line with a sort of mid-90s, mid-level Microsoft exec, I feel.
It is.
This, like, swamp brown sweater vest over a Nike polo shirt with, like, a logo on the sleeve. It's not good.
It's not. Like, that man is committed to his sweater vest as much as he's committed to his wife. Because in every scene, he is wearing a different variation of this outfit.
Loves it. I find sweater vests very difficult to get my mind around. I don't know why your torso would need to be so warm, but then you would want like a breezy sleeve moment or even a bare sleeve moment.
I have this with gilets as well. Like I keep seeing them like when I'm looking on like for stuff on eBay where it's like sleeveless like leather jackets. And I love how they look, but I also can't wrap my mind around what weather circumstance I would ever wear them in.
I think we don't have enough like in between weather. For us, it's either just Arctic or sun's out, guns out.
Because it seems like irrational to wear it with like another sleeveless number underneath. Like you need some sleeve to come out of the sleeveless jacket or the sweater vest.
Of course.
But then it's like, well, why am I not too hot in a sweater vest? Why would I not just put a jumper on?
Exactly. Another thing that I noticed just as like an interior design note is that all of the kitchens in this series seem strangely like low spec to me.
I thought this too. There was like the scene when Giselle was cooking with her kids and like their oven looked like what was in our holiday rental when we went to Florida.
It was like an 80s stove.
Yeah.
And then Karen's had like those 1970s sort of formica cabinets.
Yeah, and they all seem to have those kind of like the imitation marble countertops and things like that. And it's like, you can afford the real deal. Why is it so budget and low basic? But perhaps it's because they don't actually use their kitchens, so they think of it as less of a necessity.
I was going to say it might just be that like they're just not cooking.
Yeah. It's like either for the housekeeper or they're just ordering in. So they're just kind of like, eh, we can save that money.
I mean, I can only respect that.
If I was uber rich, one of the first things I would do would be to hire like a private chef that would just cook for me all the time.
So my mum took a flight to Newcastle probably about a year ago and she got talking to, my mum loves to talk to strangers on public transport. I don't know if this is like a mum thing. Every time she goes on Eurostar, she's like, I met a lovely boy for you, Louise. I'm like, why are you talking to 20-year-olds on the Eurostar? But she sat next to the private chef of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who's from Darlington.
What the fuck? That's such an overload of wild information in one go.
Yeah, and apparently he was like super lovely, and yeah, she had a great time talking to him. He was on his way home, he had just been with them on tour, and then he was taking like a month off, and yeah, or maybe it was Darlington or County Durham.
That is absolutely insane. I love that. I love that A, your mum just happened upon this person, B, that it's enough that he was a private chef at all, C, for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then D was just like, yeah, I live in Durham.
And then she was like, did you know Iggy Pop is very into this paleo nonsense?
I love that she's obviously just been pressing him for the different diets of the rich and famous.
She was just like, well, I just assumed someone that did that much cocaine wasn't that bothered about what else they put in their body. I was like, yeah, you make a valid point.
I mean, that is true. That is so, so true. Just trying to offset the coke with a lack of carbs.
Oh, I've been trying to cut down on my carbs. I'm just a Coke.
just the Coke. None of this carb nonsense. I've just given up on food entirely now. I made a full tray of brownies the other day and managed to make them last 2 days, which is a new record for me.
That sounds really good. I think the thing is as well, like, because you have someone else to share them with, I just can't justify baking.
Oh no, well, Greg's a vegan, so I made full non-vegan ones and I was like, I'm just gonna eat them all myself.
BBE, big brownie energy. We learn that Karen has been married for 19 years and she's still keen to keep things spicy, which I can only admire.
I know, I do love this. I think later on she says something about wanting to like keep dating her husband, which is such a lovely concept. But I just, yeah, I love it that she, like, they seem so in love. Like, their relationship seems really nice.
It seems real. It seems like both of them are still making an effort.
Which I think is so important, because it is so easy to just kind of, once you're in a relationship, you kind of just get comfortable with the fact that that relationship is there, and you kind of, like, every party sort of stops trying so much. So I think it's nice to think that they're still trying to, like, woo each other and keep each other sort of interested and excited.
Yeah, I think it's like that second kind of revival of a relationship after the kids have like flown the nest.
Yeah, and it's suddenly like back to being like young and in love again.
But then also part of me is like, I'm not sure I want to be in my mid-50s keeping things spicy. Like, at that point, just leave me be.
Yeah, the less like interaction and contact, the better.
So we go to Giselle's, and I have to say I'm kind of liking Giselle's living room. She's got these coral pink walls, she's got a zebra print pouf, some bohemian flourishes. Aside from those disgusting red leather sofas, aesthetic atrocities. I like the overall look of it.
I did. I was very into that zebra skin pouf. It looked so nice.
You love a zebra print.
I do. I'm obsessed with zebra print. Any kind of animal print, really. I'm not too fussy, but I do tend to lean more towards a leopard or a zebra.
Zebra looks so good with hot pink.
Doesn't it? It's such a good combination. I had the luscious pair of like zebra print Zara jeans that I love, and I just can't get them over my hips at the minute. So they're in a box of things that I will never throw away, but at some point will hopefully fit back into.
Yeah, you just got to hang on to some things.
I know. There's like some stuff where I'm like, I'm not arsed. Like, I'll get rid of that if it doesn't fit me at the moment. There's other stuff where I'm like, I love this so much that I physically can't bring myself to let it out of the house. So it all goes in a box under the bed and stays there.
So Karen describes herself as having taken on a leadership role in Potomac. What exactly is unclear?
This was so beautifully vague. Like, I've written down so many questions to this where I'm like, what is this leadership role? Is it a social scene hierarchy? Who decides who the leader is? What happens here? What is she doing?
What is the process? Can I see a standard operating procedures manual? Can I see the employment contract? What rate is she on? What's she looking for? What kind of culture is she trying to create in the community?
It was just so awash with questions and so kind of like vague about everything, where I just believed her. I was like, yeah, sure, why not?
You are the leader.
Maybe this is how cults start. Somebody just appoints himself a leader and that's it.
Yeah, I think I can see Karen possibly as leading a cult. She's got that quite imperious energy.
Yeah, she seems like so regal. And obviously we find out later that she was like born on a farm and stuff, and she wasn't born into this life. So the fact that she can exude this kind of like, it's like full big dick energy that she has. And like the fact that she can just exude this with like such effortlessness is truly inspirational.
Having said that, it could be a fancy farm, like plenty of rich farmers about the place.
I mean, that's true. She does say it in such like a derogatory way. But I mean, there are some like fucking unreal ranches and things around America.
Yeah, my mum always says you'll never meet a poor farmer.
Yeah, that's so true. And I mean, there's nothing nicer than like a good massive country house with like a lot of property and a lot of land and a lot of just like greenery around you. So I'd be very into that.
The Royal Agricultural College in the UK is like the poshest uni.
It's insane. It's so insane. I did contemplate going there for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, I did a full, like, 2 years at college studying, like, equine management. I did, like, horse, like, physiology and biology and things like that.
Oh, wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, so I kind of was, like, started going down, like, the equestrian kind of route, and then I went and, like, moved to Gloucester for a few months to work for, like, an inventor. And whilst I, like, enjoyed it, I was, like, living on site, but my bedroom was a porter cabin outside. And then there was, like, an old crumbling farmhouse that we used where there wasn't really hot water, and, like, the oven didn't really work all that well, while you could literally, from our porter cabin window, see their, like, humongous, like, elaborate house with, like, a full greenery roof and everything. And the amount that the staff were getting paid each week, like, I was working, like, 17-hour days some days. It was insane. And it was, like, heavy, intensive labour. And I wasn't getting paid anything because I was, like, volunteering. But the girls that did actually work there and live there were getting paid, like, £200 a week.
So how is that legal in any way? Because they gave you board or...
No, they didn't charge us for, like, staying on the property. But we had to pay for all our own, like, food and transport and, you know, all of that.
No, that's feudal shit. That's not okay.
It was insane. So, and then I kind of had came back from, like, my summer there, and I was, like, speaking to my lecturer about it at college, and he was like, it's kind of how it all is. And at that point, I was like, no, I'm going to do well in this, but I'm out of here. But my lecturer was amazing, and his husband actually used to run the uni course that I did, like, the fashion con one at Northumbria.
Oh.
So I was just like, can you put me in touch with him, please?
That's wild.
I know. So I've been on a very windy, twisty path of life. But yeah, there is a lot of money to be had in the great outdoors, I should say.
Yeah, like, you could have seduced the farmer's son or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And behind a hay bale.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, that was money on that property. It was insane.
I mean, that Etonian guy that I was, like, vaguely involved with, his, like, family estate has alpacas, which...
Incredible.
That is the selling point.
I mean, that's enough alone. I would be signing on the dotted line right then and there just for the alpacas.
So, Karen's daughter is going to do bioengineering at a top 10 school. And, yes. Of course... And Karen would like to see Giselle and her ex-husband reconcile.
I love that she's clearly basing this on the fact that she doesn't agree with divorce rather than what would actually be best for Giselle.
Yeah, of course.
Like, she obviously just thinks, you know, like, oh, he's a nice guy. He's got a lot of money. You know, you were married. It was great. So why not just go back with that? And it's like, well, you know, cheating scandal aside...
Yeah, I think Giselle is in the right to not go back to that, because it sounds like it wasn't just one affair. It sounds like it was, like, a recurring theme as well.
Yeah, I kind of got that vibe from it as well.
So then for Karen's birthday, we join Katie and Giselle, and they're at a restaurant that is described as family, but also burlesque.
I mean, it's two concepts you shouldn't really be crossing.
We find out that Katie briefly dated Russell Simmons, who co-founded Def Jam Records and Fat Farm Clothing.
Which was such a wild card, and I was so into this little, like, tidbit of fact.
Katie seems to think that if one of Robin's sons turns out gay, he might want the wedding dress. And I was like, oh, who's going to tell her that's not it, how it works?
Yeah. I mean, I love that she sort of followed it up with, like, or a drag queen. But it's like, girl, have you seen things like drag queens wear? They're not going to wear your, like, three-year-old wedding dress.
Yeah, you're, like, shitty meringue.
Yeah. Trust me.
Ivory, satin, cheap-style meringue.
Bejeweled.
This restaurant looks like somewhere that I would love to go. It's, like, full-on... Liberace mixed with tacky Italian restaurant with some big, like, replica Renaissance mural on the wall and the ceilings.
I literally also wrote down that I would fucking love to eat here. It looked incredible.
Charisse is very scandalized that Giselle orders some food before Karen's arrival.
I mean, I sort of, I understand this side of, like, the etiquette thing of where it came from. Like, if it had just been, like, an additional guest that was running late and everybody else was there, fair enough. But I think because it's her birthday, they probably could have hung on. I mean, I don't have a time frame of how late she actually was, but I'd have probably waited it in this situation.
Okay, I raise you this. I don't see the problem in ordering appetizers.
Oh, no, appetizers is fair.
Or, like, nibbles for the table. Do you know what I mean? Because if you're ordering drinks, you know, what difference does it make to get some olives or some, like, starters? But if someone's late, then honestly, screw waste for them. Like, at the end of the day, if I need food, I need food.
No, I do actually agree with the appetizers thing. I think as long as it's, like, sort of sharing, picking food, rather than, like, I've just ordered my full dinner, so, you know, you have to catch up now.
Yeah, fair enough. And then Karen eventually arrives, and apparently Karen is meant to be in the middle seat, and this is treated as, like, very basic kind of Potomac knowledge. But I was like, well, it's a booth. It's not a table with a head. That didn't seem obvious to me.
Yeah, this totally threw me. And it was obviously something that really, really irked these women, because they would not let this shit go. And it was just wild to me. Like you say, it's not like it was like a head of a table situation. Like, they're in a rounded fucking booth. There is no head. There is no middle. It's all just one.
It's just one continuous banquet. Just take a seat and chill out.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not like they stuck her at a separate table or made her sit alone at part of it. Like, you were in amongst everybody. So what? There was one extra person on one side. Why is that so wild?
Oh, but I love how this just escalates as such a, like, stupidly petty thing. And we find out that Charissa's husband is a basketball coach and living in New Jersey. Karen thinks that long distance sounds sexy because, and I quote, when he comes to see you, it's hot and popping.
I mean, this woman is really, really into spicing things up, isn't she? She's got all the ideas about this kind of stuff.
Karen is horny,
isn't she?
You can feel it through the screen.
It's like a heat just emanating from her.
I think it's like her slow movement. She's almost very cat-like in her testimonials, where she's kind of, you know, sitting up straight and kind of putting her hair back past her shoulders. She's literally, like, oozing Jessica Rabbit-y.
Yes. She even does that kind of, like, the look down, but, like, looking up from, like, under the eyelashes thing, and she does it every time she's speaking.
She does, and she loves to finish a sentence and then do, like, a little pout.
Yeah.
She kind of close her lips in that very kind of conscious way.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
So they kind of have a few speeches at the birthday dinner. The whole seating thing kind of gets swept under the rug straight away as well. Like, no one makes a scene out of it.
Yeah, which is why I kind of thought that was it. Like, they'd probably maybe kind of be like, oh, maybe next time, you know, it'd be nice if she sat in the middle or whatever. Like, I mean, these people are not 4 years old. There is no reason that a woman needed to be in the middle of the table.
I find it, okay, so we go then to Charissa's house, and she's talking to her housekeeper, I guess, Lorna.
Yeah.
I find it really difficult watching people interacting with housekeepers, and not because they shouldn't be interacting with them, obviously, but because I just find it such a weird, uncomfortable dynamic.
I do as well, and I think especially when their housekeepers are foreign or have quite a thick accent, so they kind of do that really, really ignorant, frustrating thing where they just talk loudly at them, or they talk in, like, really jarring, like, stilted sentences, if that's fine. And it's like, why not just use some of your money and help them, like, take them to English classes or get them a proper tutor or something, rather than just sort of shouting at them in broken Spanish.
Yeah, like, my family never ever had even cleaners or nannies or housekeepers growing up, but I would say that most of my friends did, to be honest. I even had friends that had, like, live-in housekeepers or live-in, like, nannies and au pairs, and I don't know if it's just because I never had that I always found it really strange, but, like, I hated it, especially when we were, like, young kids, you know. If someone, like, misplaced something or whatever, like, a lot of the time the go-to would be like, oh, well, the cleaner must have taken it or something, you know. That was almost like a go-to.
Yeah, it's like a classist default thing of like, oh, something's gone wrong, it must be their fault.
Yeah, and I just hated like the strained like communication of it all, and I just kind of thought, oh, like I'm like, I don't ever want that.
No, I'm the same, and I kind of like, I find it a really jarring thing, and I find it really uncomfortable, like say when they kind of talk to them like the help, which I hate the term the help.
Karen calls them the help later in this episode, and I was like, oh, that's so gross,
isn't it? It's such an awful thing. Like, I hate the notion of like they're the help, so they're like beneath me. It's like, if I had so much money and such, you know, like a vast property where I felt like I needed help and stuff, like I'd want that person to feel like, yeah, sure, they're an employee, but I'd want them to feel like comfortable there and like an equal footing. Like, I hate the idea that they were like a second class citizen compared to me.
Yeah, and I think there are some kind of reality TV stars that do have kind of much kind of almost a positive relationship, you know, where you can tell that there's like a genuine care and concern.
Like I think Lisa Vanderpump and her housekeeper, like I think they have quite a nice dynamic.
Yeah. And then there are a couple of housewives that I'm pretty sure I've seen them like interacting, at least in Spanish, with like their Hispanic housekeepers or nannies or whatever, which is again like a nice respectful thing rather than just being like, can you get the Blanco tank? it reminds me of Brits overseas that just think that like shouting at foreigners is going to make them understand their like thick British accents.
Yeah, it's like they just think that, and they just talk slower and louder, then therefore they make more sense. And it's like, well, if somebody came up to me and said something in Spanish and I didn't understand it, so they just said the same thing again in Spanish, just slower and louder. I still don't know what the word means. Like, I just don't understand people that can't apply that logic back to themselves.
So she says that she had a hard time fitting in around Potomac until people basically found out what her husband does, and then they were very keen to invite her to parties.
I know. I think this is just such like a sort of shitty example of this kind of like super elite mindset of like, you can only be friendly with somebody if there's A, something to gain from it, or B, they're kind of known as somebody important.
Yeah, it was interesting. I actually listened to a podcast this morning about how the NFL reopening is going to be a big kind of political coup for Trump, and it's going to play a big role in his re-election effort. And so his camp are kind of trying to make it go ahead against all of the data and in spite of the health of their players. And they interviewed this journalist about it. And he said that a lot of Americans, and this is obviously with reference mainly to like a Trump voter base, mm-hmm. they love black athletes, but they don't love black people. You know, it's that thing of like, they want to see black people perform for their benefit, but ultimately yeah. they don't care about their safety and well-being. And I think that is so manifested in the way that like Colin Kaepernick was made out after he knelt, and is now showing in this like mounting pressure the NFL is putting on teams to come and play the next season. And I just think Sharice kind of saying, oh, you know, until they found out that my husband was a basketball coach, and, you know, then they were kind of all over him. That's sort of what it made me think of.
And I think that's just such a sad sort of commentary on like the state of the way that things are, like not just in America, but just like around the world. And I think it's something like, I guess, yeah, I'd never even really thought of it as like that kind of thing, but it is that like black athletes or black celebrities are accepted because they're performing, but just generic black people on the street are not.
I think this show in particular, this franchise, is a really interesting insight for us, like as essentially British people, to kind of see how race, money and social power all intersect in the States in certain ways. And like, I don't want to get too political on this podcast or anything, because I do like to use these shows as an escapism from that. But I think it is important to like discuss and note some of these things, you know, because this show is not a historical document. You know, the show is 4 years old at the minute. And all of these small anecdotes and kind of the snippets of how these women tell us about their lives that are unfolding in these suburban, upper middle class and mostly white areas show us how that society is clinging on to some really old and like unfavorable attitudes.
Definitely. And it's kind of, it's touched on a lot that, like, it's unusual for there to be, like, Black people in Potomac and things like that, which is why I think it's actually, it's really smart. It's really good that they've made the cast, like, predominantly Black women, because I think it's such an underrepresented kind of group of people. And if you think about a lot of the other franchises, like, they can do with being diversified quite a bit. So it's quite nice to see. But yeah, I think it is. And it is just the small comments sometimes that possibly don't even really register to them anymore, possibly just from a lifetime of, like, these small incidents occurring. But when you sort of, like, put them in context, it is quite sad to think.
And I just think, I mean, you've been on Twitter and stuff, you see what's happening right now with Black Lives Matter and in Minnesota and stuff. Like, there's still such a long way to go. Like, there's still so much work to do. And I'm following with interest and kind of seeing what's happening. You know, I think America is such a tinderbox, I think more so than England, because, you know, people are armed and they're more, I think the internet has empowered, like, these super right-wing groups a lot more to kind of come together and mobilize. And so, you know, I'm watching this show because, yeah, it's silly and it's great fun and it's trashy and it's drama, but I'm also watching it always kind of thinking about all of those other things as well.
Yeah, and I think you kind of have to, like you say, like, I'm the same, like, I love watching this because it is just escapism from, like, my real world and my kind of, like, environment, because it's so far removed from, like, reality for me that I find it such nice escapism. But I think it's kind of important to remember those kind of contexts as well, like, when you're watching it.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, it adds to the show rather than takes away from it, because it, you know, nothing is created in a vacuum.
Yeah, 100%.
So Giselle brings a guest unannounced. It's okay, because the guest is going to help with the crabs, and so is she. So they're doing a crab boil.
I don't know what this is. I think I've heard of them, like, in the Hamptons and things, where they have, like, crab cookout kind of things. I don't know. It seems like a strange thing to me. This is definitely not a thing that's in England.
No, no. I mean, we would never just gather around a bucket of live crabs and, like, boil them alive and be like, wholesome.
Yeah, wholesome family fun.
Having said that, we do hog roasts, which, you know.
That is true, actually, yeah.
Oh, God, how good are hog roasts?
God, I literally could live off just, like, a, like, proper, like, pork hog roast sandwich with stuffing and gravy. Oh.
Why did you have to put that image in my head?
No, I'm so sorry.
So Charisse goes upstairs to get her makeup done, and Giselle goes, she left me downstairs like I was the hired help, which, again, we hate that word, the help, or that term, but it's also a weird comment to me. Like, what, you want to get invited upstairs to just watch her get her makeup done?
I know, and I guess it's kind of like, again, it's kind of how that situation was pitched to them. Like, if maybe Charisse was like, look, I'm going to go get my hair and stuff done, like, are you guys all right down here or what have you? That would be one thing, but I guess if she just kind of wandered off with, like, her glass of champagne and just sort of left them to it as if they were, like, expected to do all the cooking. Because it did make me laugh that, like, she invited them around to, like, get some help with the cooking, and she basically just stood there barefoot with her glass of champagne watching them.
So Giselle's response to this, and Giselle's friend, is to just start rifling through her drawers and cupboards, which, you know, completely logical escalation.
Totally a natural next step. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, there's always times when you're in anybody's house, you have that overwhelming curiosity of just liking to see how they do things. Like, I don't know if it's just, like, me, but I love seeing sort of, like, people's, like, stuff in situ. But I would never in a million years just start helping myself to their cupboards and drawers for no reason.
No. And then we go upstairs and Charisse is getting her toes done at the same time as her makeup.
I mean, I cannot believe this woman was, like, getting a full fucking pedicure.
It was odd. It was, yeah. So they're downstairs, like, fully lolling with Lorna at this point, clattering about the kitchen, being like, does Charisse drink a lot? And Lorna's like, oh, I can't say anything about that.
I know, which, I mean, to be fair, it looked like the most, like, fun that housekeeper had ever had. And I think it was possibly, like, because, I've forgotten her name, Giselle, because Giselle was talking to her like another human.
Yeah, exactly.
She seemed like really relaxed and stuff, but I mean, it was quite telling that she was like, oh, I can't answer that. Like, you could have said no.
The other thing that really made me laugh is that as kind of time keeps going, Giselle is actually getting her hair done in like the downstairs loo as guests start arriving. Got the door open, she's getting her hair done like over the sink.
I mean, I refuse to believe that that house didn't have at least one of the working bathroom that she could have quickly gone into.
Karen is fuming that she has to walk up the driveway.
I mean, this is literally the second time in one episode where she's complained about the amount of time that she has to spend walking to somebody's house. Like, you get the sense that she is a woman that literally wants to be deposited at the front door, if not already inside the entrance foyer.
I mean, literally, imagine getting to a point that you're this entitled and delusional. I cannot wait.
But the idea of going up steps to somebody's house is such an inconvenience. And it's considered rude.
And it's considered something that you would make a point of having a word about with the host.
I need to have a word with you about how many steps there are to your house because it's unacceptable.
So Giselle emerges and starts to greet the guests, because we kind of skated over this, but there was like a brief confrontation upstairs where Charisse kind of told them to stay downstairs and, you know, threatened to chuck them out of the house, more or less.
So wild that she was so like offended that they came upstairs to like ask her a question.
Well, yeah, like, they were just basically trying to work out what was going on.
Yeah, like, what do we do now? Because we've cooked your dinner for you. So, like, what do you want us to do? And, like, I find it so bizarre that she was so upset that they had the audacity to walk up her staircase.
The audacity. So, Giselle's hair, I mean...
Oh, no.
The fringe was like a clip-in fringe, but I felt like the borders of it, like, kept going on either side.
It like went too far back and it wasn't like feathered into her hair, and it just looked so heavy. Like, she looked so much nicer and so much like younger and way more beautiful with her hair off her face, and that fringe just did nothing for her.
Yeah, one has to assume that they had raided quite a lot of wine at this point, and yeah, the hairdresser maybe wasn't up to its usual standards, because it was a bit of a strange one, I feel.
It also looked like kind of crooked, like it was sort of moving around her face as the filming went on.
And then Karen is talking to Giselle by the pool, and Karen gifts Giselle a framed picture of the 5 rules of etiquette when attending a birthday party, which Karen has clearly just invented and typed into a Word document.
It had full, like, word art vibes, didn't it?
Oh, and then she said, it's a mirrored frame, so you can look at yourself while you read it.
I mean, she truly thought of everything. What a gift.
I loved this. And I also like that Giselle obviously like took it well. And she said, people come for me all the time. They just don't find me. Which I adore.
Very, very into that kind of energy.
The preview got me all excited again.
I know, it looked so good. Like, it looked like so much is happening, because obviously now that we've had like this falling out of like Karen and Giselle over what is literally where somebody sat, like all they had to do was swap, and apparently that would have made the world of difference, which is so fucking startling to me.
Yeah, I love how petty this has started off, but I also feel like there's enough undercurrents of actual tension of things that you know are going to boil over. You know, you've got Robin and Juan and their like dodgy relationship. You start to have questions about the veracity of kind of Karen's claims about her life. You get kind of Katie potentially being rebuffed by a boyfriend when it comes to marriage. So I think this was like a nice light way to kind of introduce us to people and set it off. But things are going to get interesting.
I agree. I think it was a perfect sort of mix of like completely ridiculous and just enough stuff like bubbling away under the surface, like Karen and like Giselle's like sort of frenemy relationship thing that they have and that sort of thing. So I'm really excited to watch the rest of it. It took all my willpower to not put the next one on straight away.
I mean, I love those old timey recreation places as well. You know, they've got that picture where they're all like dressed up with the guns in their garters. Some of my best memories in America, those villages where they just do like the historical reenactors and they have, you know, the insane dresses, or, you know, like Native American ghost towns in the desert. We get a sneak peek of Ashley Darby, who ends up becoming quite central later on in the season.
Yeah, because this is what threw me and what made me, because the episode I'd watched, she was obviously quite a front and center character. And I think it was from this season, because there's bits of it alluded to in the preview. So I don't know where the fuck I watched, but, you know. So I was so confused when I was actually watching it, because she wasn't, like, in the credits. She wasn't there with the glass of champagne. So I was like, oh, is she just a friend of? But presumably after next episode, she becomes, like, a full-time housewife.
Your Heyu must have been making decisions for you about where to start you off.
It's truly been having my life at the minute. It's been, I can't watch it on my old iPad anymore, which is the one that I can plug into the TV, so I can no longer watch it on the TV, so I can only watch it on my iPad. It wouldn't play on the iMac, and I haven't tried it on my laptop yet.
You had such a meltdown when you thought you couldn't get it going.
Oh my God, honestly, you know, when things just don't work, and they've always worked and it should work, and you're like, why?
We also see Katie fully eating her man's face off just in the midst of a social function.
I mean, I'm not a big PDA kind of a gal, and I mean, there is always a time and a place, but have at it, you know, if you're having a good time, why not?
I loved it. We see that Charisse's marriage is in some trouble.
I know, I saw this as well. And I think it was kind of set up for that, even just in that dinner around like the birthday meal that they had, where she was kind of, where Giselle was probing her about it. So it was kind of laying the groundwork that that might not be as perfect as it seemed.
I think that Charisse has quite a, quite the ability to be not only in denial, but be quite sort of deluded and self-important, which makes for an interesting blend when confronted with this kind of situation.
I agree. And she also kind of strikes me as the sort of woman that would just like avoid any red flags and turn the other way for the sake of saving face. Like she would almost see it as better that she has like a functioning marriage than have one that like get divorced because it's healthier.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of find it rich that these ladies are probing Robin so much, because although it's kind of a complicated situation, you know, Robin did file for divorce when the infidelity happened, and like she's working through things for the sake of her kids, but she's definitely not pretending that everything is hunky-dory, so.
Yeah, exactly, and it's kind of like just that little bit of like honesty and realness, which I think some of the other women probably struggle to have.
There's tears, there's bitching, there's footage of them bumping into Ashley's husband at the gay bar. It's the content I need to help me block out just all of the awfulness in this world.
I'm so excited to see the rest of it. I think we made a great choice with Potomac.
It was solid. It was solid. Follow Faith on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth. Faith spelt with two H's on the end there. And you can also check out her writing work on her website, www.faithrichardson.co.uk. You can follow me on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers. Plenty of housewives / fashion related content on there. And you can check out my website at louisarogers.net. We will talk to you on Sunday for much anticipated Roni.
Oh, I can't wait.
Bye.